Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Michael Dresser Show. There's no topic this program is afraid to address or investigate, whether it be social, political, or current events, including some very sensitive cultural issues of today. The views expressed by the host, guest, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views of this station. Now, step into the realm of clarity with your host, Michael Dresser.
Wonderful.
It had to be.
We'll join you back at about 20 after.
Michael?
Yo.
Michael.
I'm here.
The next guest is ready to go. I will transfer her. She was just waiting to get that go-ahead from me, okay?
Oh, okay. Annie?
That's it's Annie, yeah. So I'm going to email her back.
No problem.
To call her. Okay. Okay. I'm emailing her now. Bye.
Okay. Welcome back. I'm Michael. You're listening to The Michael Dresser Show. And Anyhan with us, the author of Things I Did When I Was Hungry, Navigating a Peaceful Relationship with Food. Annie's a yoga and mindfulness teacher. She's the founder of the Circle Yoga Cooperative and DC Yoga Week. She's also an ordained lay Buddhist minister, licensed massage therapist, mother of four young adults. She lives in Washington, D.C. with her husband, their cat, and two terriers, and blogs about mindfulness and life in AnnieMahon.com. Annie, I welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. You know, there's a very interesting world, that word, the word mindful. I would venture to guess there is a, and who knows what the stats are, but there is a great percentage of people out there that have no idea that they are living in the present, behind, and no concept of what's going on right now.
Yeah, could you, it's a little difficult to hear you on my end. Could you?
Okay, how about if I speak up a little bit? Is that better?
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Okay. Now, based on age, who knows what I just said? let me retake it.
I heard most of you. I heard most of what you said about people not knowing what mindfulness is. Is that what you said?
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
So they're living ahead, they're living behind, and they miss so much of life of what's going on right now.
Yes. Yes. That is true, and that's how I was and still am sometimes. But that's what the practice of mindfulness is all about, to help us get back to the present moment so we're not missing it.
Now, where did you discover mindfulness? And it is a discovery. We live our lives running around, and then all of a sudden one day, if you're lucky, or you're meant to be, you discover this thing called mindfulness. Where was it for you?
Well, I had heard little bits about mindfulness because I practiced a little bit of meditation back in the 70s when I was a teenager, but I hadn't really heard the term mindfulness applied to it until in the 1990s. I picked up a book by the Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh. It's called The Miracle of Mindfulness. And I read that book and I thought, now this is the truest thing I've ever read. This could really help me. And so I started practicing right then and going on retreats and practicing sitting meditation and walking meditation and just trying to be more often in the present moment. And I'm telling you, over the years, it completely transformed my whole life.
You want a great example of mindfulness? Just a great example.
Yeah.
Are you sitting by a desk?
I'm not currently, but I have been.
Okay. All right. Are you on a chair?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Touch the chair.
Okay.
Okay. Before you touched that chair, it didn't exist, did it?
Yeah, you're right.
Absolutely. I mean, it was there. But and think about how we go through life that way. With a significant other, with somebody that you're dealing with, that you don't touch them. You don't have to physically touch them, but emotionally, mentally touch them. They're not there. And I think there's one of the biggest problems we have, and I think it's so important that people like yourself move through life saying, this is what this is, because look what you miss if you're not aware.
Oh, I so agree with you, especially when it comes to our partners and our loved ones. I mean, we can be sitting beside them in the car, and we're in a completely different world. It's like they're not even there. And we think, oh, we know everything about them, but we don't know who they are in this moment unless we turn and connect with them. I so agree with you.
No, absolutely. Time and again, I've listened to some interesting things people do. But years ago on the show, there was a woman, I will never forget this, that at, I think it was like 6 o'clock every Sunday night, whether she and her husband were in a battle, they were in love, or whatever it was, they stopped and kissed.
Oh.
Yeah. It was just a reaffirmation. And the other thing about mindfulness, which I think is just something that you have to stay with. There was a movie that I watched. I can't remember the movie, but I remember so much what the woman said in the movie, and it was about being married. And she said that person that you're married to is your witness to life. And that's really what it is. Yes. And the people around you need to know that you witness them. And you can only do it if you're aware that they're there.
Yes, yes. And the biggest gift we can give anyone is just our attention and being there with them. That's what we all want. That's what we're all craving.
Sure.
Someone to be there with us.
Yeah. And that's really what the key is. Yeah. Now, when
and
you
I
come
think
down
it's the
to,
same. Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think it's the same thing for ourselves, too. Like, what we really want is to be there for ourselves, too, in any moment, to really experience our life. That's what we're lonely. A lot of us feel lonely. We feel cut off. But when we really arrive in our life, we don't feel that way anymore.
No, not at all. And I gave this example on the air, I guess, it was last week sometime, I think. But it is so critically important. In 2002, I went through a divorce. And it was a nice divorce. She and I are still friends. Mm-hmm. She's married. She's in Hawaii, and she does my taxes. So we're still friends.
That's good.
But you know, when you split up with somebody, if you've ever been divorced, it's that first 6 months or so that no matter who made the decision, if you've been with somebody long enough, they're there. I mean, you hear their voice. You feel them, even though they don't exist where it is anymore. So I ended up in the house. So I'm there one night, and I decided I'm going to make some tacos. So there's just myself, the dog, cats, and I started making tacos, and I started filling up the kitchen table. And the more that I got into it, the more I made, And by the time I was done, the entire table was filled. I mean, you could have, you know, fed 10 people. And I sat down and enjoyed it. And let me tell you what I got out of it, my mindful moment. At that moment was a transition. I realized that I didn't need to be with anybody to enjoy myself. Didn't mean I didn't want to
yeah.
be. But
right.
I didn't need someone there. And that made a whole difference in the world. Mindfulness.
Yeah, because you arrived there for yourself. You were there
yeah.
for yourself, and you're really there. And that's what we want. And that's what makes us really alive.
Well, absolutely. And I don't think that you give anything to anybody. Because if you really think about it, when you've given something to someone, how do you feel about it? What you've done is you've given to yourself, which is a good
yeah.
thing. Yeah.
Well, and whatever we offer to others, it really does offer to ourselves. Because I think with my husband, you know, when I'm not so nice to him, I pay
yeah.
the consequence of that later, right? So it
oh,
doesn't matter. Like, you know, if I'm mean to him, I'm just as well be mean to myself because it disconnects me.
Yeah, and I think what we find out is he's got nothing to do with it. It's just that you're on yourself at that point. I don't think that anybody says anything bad about us. They're talking about themselves.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and when we get
yes,
that, it's really good.
And in the book, I talk a little bit about this idea of a sore toe. Like, we all have these sore toes that we developed in childhood or in a previous lifetime, if we believe in that, but that these are our things, and people step on them, and it's not doesn't mean that they've done something wrong. It's just that we have a sensitivity, and when we can share that with them, then they can choose to not step on it again, but it's really our sore
yeah.
toe. It's not theirs.
And I wonder how many times they even know they're stepping on a sore toe.
Right. Exactly. They
yeah.
don't even know it. So we can educate them. We can say, you know, this is my sore toe. Could you please not step on it? If you can try, you know, do this instead. And then it makes for a much better relationship.
And then there comes this very interesting thing that so many people have problems with. We're going to talk about something called mindful eating.
Yes.
Yes.
It's a challenging one. It's a definitely, for me, mindful eating and mindful speaking are the two areas of mindfulness that I personally found the most challenging. And it's probably because there's so much conditioning around them for me. I had so many struggles with eating as a teenager and a young adult that I was conditioned to really use food as an escape. And so for
oh,
me,
absolutely.
Developing mindfulness around food was difficult. Yeah.
Yeah, doesn't it come down to a choice for value? And when I say value, what you're going to get the best out of, you know, and if it's eating, and if that's the value, that's where you're going to go with it. But I really believe that most of us don't have that second choice to say, well, there's more value in not eating this because this is what I get. But you got to be aware of what it is out there.
No, exactly. You're exactly right, because this is what the Buddha called the second arrow. So, for example, if we have a binge, we eat too much or we don't feel good about what we ate and we don't feel well, that's the first arrow. That's the first suffering. But then we add suffering to us by then beating ourselves up or making it a big deal or then getting caught in, like, then not eating. You know, we continue the suffering ourselves, and that's a choice we make, but a lot of us don't know we're doing that, so we kind of do it out of habit, and we create more suffering for ourselves.
Oh, absolutely. And then if you let yourself go, you see things that you normally wouldn't see. And I think not so much knowledge comes from, but it's the application of the knowledge. You can learn all you want, but if you're not doing anything with it, it's just a waste of time. But I think that's really what it is. We listen,
yeah.
we hear, and then we don't get those practical, wrap your arms around it, this is how to do it, fixes that we're all looking for and we need.
Right, right. Yeah, that is
yeah.
true.
You know, and when you come down to it, it's like what you teach. This doesn't come automatic. This is a learned skill. And most of life,
mm-hmm.
living, relationship, it's all a learned skill. And if you
mm-hmm.
start to get that, then you go learn.
Well, and what really helped me understand that, too, was that this idea that our mind is hardwired for negative experience, excuse me, and it's not hardwired for positive, we have to work harder to stay focused on positive things. Because the way the brain was developed is that when something negative happens, we want to be sure that we're there to protect ourselves, right? So that's how we survive. But positive things we're less likely to cling, we're less likely to hold in our mind. So to be able to be present, we have to really practice it, because the mind is trying to stay sort of anxious all the time and keep us safe and keep us safe, and it's always ruminating. But in order to stay present to something nice that's happening to us, like eating a meal or being with a loved one, we have to practice. We have to work at it. It doesn't come naturally, like you said.
Yeah, and Annie, the biggest part of it is most of it comes unconscious. You're not even aware of what's going on and why you're responding and you're reacting to something. I remember when I was a kid, I must have been 6, 7 years old, I'm standing in front of the mirror, I'm in the bathroom, I got my cowboy hat on, my toy guns, I'm screaming, yelling, I'm having the greatest time. And my dad walked in and laughed at me, just completely, totally shut me right off. Now, at that stage of the game, I played in front of the mirror again, but he never did it again out loud. And then I began to realize it as a teenager and an adult. If anybody laughed at me, they looked down at me, there would have been an argument, a fight, or something. I was surviving. Mm-hmm. I was responding, and it was all unconscious. Did not realize it had to do at that moment. And that's why I believe, sitting down and writing things down lets you look at it from the outside in.
Definitely. Definitely journaling, writing is a great way to do that. And in mindfulness, there are other sort of non-writing skills that we can develop, too, to be starting to see what's happening in our mind just by sitting still. And part of the practice is we have to be able to sit still with our mind first before we can really see what's in there. If our mind is always hopping onto the next thing or distracting ourselves, then we really can't see, like what you're talking about. We can't dive into those kind of stories and find out why we're behaving the way we're behaving if we're always hopping onto the next thing or distracting ourselves.
Oh, absolutely. I wonder how many people we throw out of our lives because of these unconscious things. You walk into a room, you see somebody, and we've all done this. You don't like them, him or her, whoever it is. There's no reason why not to like them. You've never seen them before. Within that first 10 seconds, you don't like them.
Oh, exactly.
They remind you of something. But by the way, why yoga for you? And I think yoga is great.
Yeah. Well, I love yoga. Yoga, actually, I came to yoga before mindfulness because I liked the kind of relaxing aspect and the movement. And then I started to practice yoga more, started to a little bit teach kids yoga. And around the same time, I discovered mindfulness. And so for me, yoga was a way to practice mindfulness of my body. So a way to be really in my body and slowly moving through postures and feeling the ground and feeling my arms. And it was a way to really deepen my mindfulness practice. So I actually taught yoga as a mindfulness practice. I taught a class called Yoga and Mindfulness for a long time. And so for me, yoga is a way to deepen that. It's not a separate thing.
And in essence, when you're, and I'm not an expert, but when you're doing it, you're concentrating, you're there, you're aware. And if you move that into your personal life, all of a sudden things look a little bit different. The arguments that you would have gotten into, you don't get into. The failures that you thought they had aren't failures anymore. I don't think anybody fails. No matter how bad it is, there's a lesson in it. There's something in it that will allow you to grow and expand.
Yes, I totally agree. And the yoga, what it does is it allows us to be in our bodies when we're moving about in the world, too, because it's a moving practice. So when we're moving about in the world, we're more aware of our body. And for me, in my body is where I find all this information. Like, for example, if I'm being reactive, if someone, like my husband, says something and I'm triggered by it, and I can feel it inside my body. It's not like something just in my head. I feel it as like, oh, here comes some anger, right? And I feel it coming up in my body. So yoga has helped me sort of get more clear and perfect that practice of knowing what's there and feeling it in my body. And when I'm able to just feel it and not go off on a reactive path, then I can transform it into something else. And I don't have to throw a plate at him like I've done or, tell him to F off or whatever it is that I want to do.
Sure.
I don't have to do that anymore because I now can see, oh, this is anger.
Yeah, and when you really come down to it, he could have walked in the room and looked at you in a certain way, had nothing to do with I don't love you, but it was a reminder of something, and all of a sudden it goes.
Exactly. And that's it's in our mind. It's in our neural pathways. That look triggers something in my mind, and if I'm not aware of it, then I'm just going to keep acting out. And I see this all the time in the women that I teach in the DC jail. is that they're on this path over and over again, and they haven't had found a way to break out of it so that they can see, oh, I'm being controlled by this unconscious stuff that's in there.
You know, one of the questions I would ask these women when you're working with them is, do you have an identity? You know, because if you don't have one, if you get arrested all the time, that gives you an identity.
Interesting. Yeah, so you feel like that they don't really have a sense of who they are in the world, like why they're here kind of thing.
Sure. So, you know, and as long as they're going to jail, somebody's paying attention to them.
Yeah. Interesting.
Just a thought. And the other thing there's one other thing that this example has come up probably 20,000 times a week, but I don't think it can be said enough, okay? When you go home tonight and sit down with your husband, before you throw the plate at him, okay? you want to ask him this very interesting question. How do you know when you're loved? Not how do you receive it, how do you know? You get that answer, and all of a sudden things that would normally happen won't. And I would ask each one of the kids the same question. Not how do you receive it, how do you know?
And did that work? Did they give you an answer?
Oh, people have given, but it's never the same answer because everybody's so individual. Yeah.
Yes,
and there's
I think
kids.
That's an interesting, I'm not sure I know exactly. I'd have to sit down and sit still with that for a little while to see how is it that I know that I'm loved. Yeah.
Interesting. And then when you know and when you recognize it, it's the same thing. But when you get mad at somebody, it's that unconscious, oh, they love me. Quick example. I meet somebody, we fall in love, and the way I've received love is a wink, a look, expression, tone of voice, something. And the way that they've received it is maybe I buy them something, it means I love you. So we're going along for 2 years, we move in together, and I'm winking and looking, and my tone of voice is there. And I walk in one night, and she's all packed up, she's ready to leave. So where are you going? I'm leaving. What do you mean you're leaving? Well, you don't love me. What do you mean I don't love you? You never show me. Never showed her in a way that she's learned that it's hers. And I think that one question alone with kids, do you realize the problems that could stop before they even start?
Yeah, I love that. I'm going to ask my four kids that tonight when I call them.
Yeah, good.
That's a great idea. Yeah. Thank you.
with a little yoga, that'll help too.
Yeah. Not all my kids do yoga, unfortunately, and not all of them meditate, but I've got a little bit in there. They've been there.
And it's okay. You know, whatever works is whatever works, and that's when it really comes down to it. One other thing. We're starting to run out of time, but the Plum Village Zen. What is that? What is
Plum Village is a place in southern France where Thich Nhat Hanh has a monastery. And so it's a retreat center and a Buddhist monastery, and it's a place that I've gone every year for many years to learn more. Like 2 years ago, I did a 21-day retreat there, and 2 years before that, another 21-day retreat, and in between, I did shorter retreats. And it's a place where I really have learned the practice of mindfulness. So the Zen master, Thich Nhat Hanh, that's his monastery, and so he's the main teacher I've studied with, although he's sick now, and I have some other teachers as well. But that's where I practiced and learned and then tried to bring that back into my life.
Now, let me ask you this. I read the book page by page, cover to cover, and I walk away. What do I, Michael, the reader, what do I get? What's my takeaway? What do I have that I didn't have before I read the book?
Well, a couple of things. One, I hope that there are some practical ideas about ways to practice mindful eating, ways to slow down, ways to be with food. But then underneath all that is sort of this narrative about my life where it's clear that practicing mindfulness can really lead us to a place that isn't perfect, but it's happier and more content. And just by these small little things of being more present in our lives, we can really transform into a life that's much happier. And even how imperfect it still is, and, you know, everyone's life is a little bit imperfect, I think, and mine is plenty imperfect, but it's much, much happier, and I'm much more content. And I think that's what I hope people get out of it, is just, you know what, it's okay. You don't have to be perfect, but by practicing a little bit more present, you can be much happier.
Yeah, I get the title for your next book.
Oh, good.
You ready?
What is it? Yes.
The Power of the Dish.
That's not good. The dish was not, it was not a good moment for me.
No, still. Anyway, by the way, I want to thank you so much. And by the way, did we miss anything about the book?
Oh, there are some recipes in there as well, some of my own, but also okay. some of my friends who helped me along the way. So that's something that's nice, too. So, no, I mean, it's a wonderful book, I think, and I think people could really get a lot out of it, especially if you have any kind of issues with food. But even if you don't, any kind of addictive or compulsive issues, it's really helpful.
Wonderful. Annie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Michael. Have a wonderful day.
Oh, you too. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Next guest is up.
Welcome back. I'm Michael. You're listening to The Michael Dresser Show. We're going to talk about something called Stop Wasting Your Time Blaming Others for Your Life. Tamara Hartley with us, speaker, author, advice columnist, personal success coach. She helps individuals eliminate then the overwhelm in their lives and find their unique balance so they can focus on accomplishing their goals. Many people have goals, they have dreams, but remain stuck because they're unsure about what to do, where to start, or how to make it happen. Tamara helps them with the how and helps individuals take the necessary action and the steps to make their dreams become a reality. Her clients have dubbed her the how-to coach. And let us see, Tamara, hi. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Oh, and thank you so much for being here. You know, when you really come down to it, I'm going to use the R word. The R word is responsibility. Most of us just don't take it for what we do, do we?
We do not. It is so easy to blame others and to sit back and just let others take control of the blame.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But is that something that's just built into culture?
You know what? I think it is because everyone's always looking for, like, that scapegoat. I think we do it in so many arenas of our life that it becomes a natural habit from the time you're a child until adulthood. You just learn to put it off and blame others and just not focus on it.
Now, by the way, where was it for you that you realized that blaming other people just keeps you stuck in the same place constantly?
Well, you know, I've been through so many different situations in my life, and I started writing this book, and I actually started 2 years ago from a different perspective. And as I was writing this book, I just had this big aha moment. All of these situations in my life were kind of connected, and I was the common denominator. So I learned that, wow, I'm making these choices that's causing these situations to reoccur in my life. And I started seeing where that power, I was giving away power blaming others instead of focusing on solutions. So it really kind of 2 years ago really hit me like, wow, I'm the common denominator. I'm the one in control of all of this.
You know, it's interesting, too, because you hold a bachelor's degree in business administration, dual discipline master's degree in marketing, communication, and it goes on and on. So the key is this, basically. Whether you're in a relationship or you're in the middle of a corporate business, it's all the same thing, isn't it?
It really is. And like you are that common denominator. It's all about your personal choices and what you allow to happen in any of those situations.
Yeah, and that's really what the key is, because If you don't take responsibility in business especially, it's going to affect your bottom line at the end of the month. And the other side of that, if you don't take responsibility in a relationship, it's going to affect the outcome of the relationship.
Yes, it is. And I think, you know, I think also we're scared of taking blame. We're scared of pointing the fingers at ourselves, but then that keeps you stuck and it keeps you stagnant, and you can't make new choices and move away from that situation. When you're in a work situation, we're so scared of getting fired or something's going to happen. It's easier to place the blame on someone else. Like, oh, I didn't do it well. She did this or he did that, and we've learned to do that throughout our lives.
You know, and I think really what's tough when it comes down to it, and I know you discussed this, it's the ability to share the experience, to be able to talk about it. And I wonder if it's not trusting the people around us or not trusting ourselves because of that fear of judgment.
I think it's a combination of both. Yes, we fear others judging us or thinking we're not confident or we don't know what we're doing or we made a mistake. You know, so that I think there is a fear of that judgment. But I think also we're fearful of ourselves because you don't want to admit that you've done something wrong, even to yourself.
Yeah. No, and very true. But, you know, but when you really look at this and it's not wanting to admit and blaming others, there's this thing called forgiveness. And that's not something that we automatically know how to do. That's a learned response, isn't it? That's a skill.
I agree with that, too, because even when people sometimes say they forgive, they really don't. They're still holding grudges. They're still making choices and decisions based upon that hurt. They haven't really forgiven at all. A lot of times I don't think people know how to really forgive and let it go, even forgive themselves for making mistakes and bad decisions throughout your life. You don't even forgive yourself.
Yeah, and by the way, have you come up with a definition of forgiveness? You know, because you know we keep hearing forgiveness, but it's if you can't define it, you'll never get anywhere with it.
Yeah, I do agree with that. And for me, when I look at forgiveness, forgiveness is one, acknowledging that something happened and being able to move beyond it. That doesn't mean bringing it up every couple of months, every couple of days. It means really being able to acknowledge that it happened and move forward without feeling any type of way about it. I also use forgiveness as a learning lesson, though. That doesn't mean you become this doormat that just let everybody walk all over you, but it teaches you lessons, and you're a better person because you forgive, you learn, and you move on.
But I think the big key is before you forgive anybody else, you have to forgive yourself, don't you?
You really do, and I think that's a step that a lot of people miss. They don't forgive themselves. Some people are more forgiving to others than they are to themselves. You know, it's like, okay, I can accept and forgive her, but I'm holding on to something I did back, you know, when I was 18 or a mistake I made before that. You know, we hold our grudges against ourselves.
Sure, and if I don't forgive me, I'm still blaming you.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if I'm not out of it, you're in it. Yeah.
That's right. Someone has to take the fall, and sometimes we prefer the other person to do so.
But, you know, and it's a power, and it's true. But the key is most of us run through life, we're not aware of the choices and the options that are out there that just a very simple choice can, like forgiving yourself, can turn your entire life around. But it's being aware of those options.
Yeah. Awareness is truly key. And sometimes, you know, when we're not aware of what's going on, we can't learn from it. So awareness is definitely the key. You have to acknowledge the situation and then make choices and actions from there.
Yeah, and I think it's got to come fast. You know, when I say come fast, I know you talk about this. When you make a decision, you make a choice, it's not sitting and thinking about it. You've got to move in that direction. It's got to come now.
Yeah, we do have to learn to be decisive. You know, and a lot of times we're not decisive. We don't make a clear, conscious choice or decision. We kind of put one leg over the fence and stay on the other side. You know, you can't do that. You can't straddle the fence. You have to make a decision, be decisive, and stick to your choice.
Yeah, and the other thing is to forgiving yourself and also accepting something. And this is something that you cover. It's making a new choice or decision doesn't always mean that you're free of the consequence of the previous choices or decision. You've got to be able to live with that stuff. If you did it, you did it. It's not the end of your life.
Yeah. And that's another thing. When we try to forgive, we think things go away. When we release ourselves, we think things go away. No, you still might have to deal with consequences of your poor choices, but that still you still have power because you can move forward, you can stand in that and accept it.
Yeah, yeah. And those choices that you're making are based on today.
Yeah, and facing it head on, not just sticking your head in the sand like nothing ever happened. You know, you just got to face it, whether you're scared, fearful, just face it head on and accept it.
You know, and the stuff about judgment, ridicule, misunderstanding, we're going to run into that no matter what we do. And I think it's time that we all, you know, looked in the mirror and said, that's the only person that can really ridicule you or judge you. And I have found for years, and it probably comes up 2-3 times a show, that when you come down to it, if somebody's blaming you for something, they're yelling at you for something, they're accusing you of something, it has nothing to do with you. It has to do with them, and you happen to be there at the time. And if you take it on, then there's the problem. But if you begin to really realize it's not you, the world turns around.
Absolutely. That is actually one of the lessons that I talk about in the book, is that you're in charge of your own happiness and you can only change you. And that goes for everyone. So when you're projecting that anger and onto someone else, you're doing the exact same thing. You can only change you.
Yeah, I got a great definition of anger years and years ago. And what the definition was anger is blocked expression. You never got angry at anybody who would listen to you.
Yeah, I like that. I can see that. I like that definition.
Yeah. It's yours now.
You just kind of project it on the others. Well, thank you. I will borrow that.
You know, and the key is if I'm going to define myself based on what I think you think I'm about, I'm going to dilute my entire ability to live a comfortable life.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely have to define what your life is for you, define what success is to you. You cannot live your life by what outsiders and others think, or you'll be unhappy and always in this constant cycle of trying to impress other people, and you are going to be unhappy.
Oh, sure. Tamara, the people that you work with, that they bring you in as a coach, as an advisor, is it when they first come in, is there an overall common problem that they sit down with? Is there something that seems to be this overarching theme that it doesn't matter who they are, what socioeconomic level they're in, it's all the same thing?
You know, there are quite a few things that I think my audiences have in common. But one of the things that I see quite often, especially when I go into whether it's someone trying to start a business, someone working for a corporation, there are a lot of people who are unfulfilled and they're trying to do some other things, but they really don't know how to do it, how to take action. We hear a lot of this, live your passion, live your dream. You know, some people are in their dream right now and don't know it, and they don't know how to really develop into that and to be happy. So I see that as a common theme throughout all of my audiences. And people have different desires, but they're all still stuck for some reason.
So they haven't really defined their destination. You know, it's like you just said, live your dream, live your desire. But if I don't know what my dream is, how am I going to live it, and how am I going to find the path to get there?
Absolutely.
Okay, now do you help?
Sometimes go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, I was going to say, do you help people?
We're talking at the same time. Go ahead. You
I know,
ask your
but
question.
We're having fun. Yeah. Go ahead.
So I said, you know, I do help people kind of define. I help people to look inside and see what is it that you really want. Most people know they're just afraid to say it, or they just don't know how to make it happen. So what I do is I talk them through that process, and we figure out what is it that you even want to begin working on or working towards. That's the first step. And again, it goes back to awareness, knowing who you are and what you really want, not what someone else wants for you.
Yeah, and what I have found, you know, years ago, if you want to define perfection, perfection is the highest form of function. And if you and I meet, and I'm not going to let you know who I am, I'm going to let you see what I think you want me to be so you'll accept me, I'm deluding myself, because I'll never be the first best you. I'll never be the perfect you, what that does, it dilutes the perfect Michael. And I think we run around that way. We're not living for ourselves. We're living based on what we think somebody else would like us to be.
when you're not being perfect Michael, that doesn't give me permission to be perfect Tamara. So I tell people all the time, be who you are. That's another lesson from the book. Be who you are unapologetically, and you give others permission to do the same. All of us can take off those masks and live authentically.
Yeah, but they're frightened to death to take the mask off. You know, and I'm going to go into the culture that we live in. Everybody's frightened to death of saying, this is who I am, and if I show you who I am, you may not like me. And this is what, thank God there's people like you out there working with these things, because this this problem is so automatic, I would venture to guess that it's affecting the majority of the population, and I don't care what country we're in.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely believe that.
Have you seen things change over the years when, you know, when you first started doing this to now? Is it a different conversation, or is it the base is always the same, but the way you approach it may be a little different?
I think the conversation has changed and gotten better a little. I think now people are more into who they are, living their passions, living their dreams. There was a time when we went to work, we didn't know we were supposed to love our job. You know, right. We just did those things normally. You know, I was told when I went to college to be a doctor, lawyer, something that can make money. No one ever told me about, you know, be passionate, live your dream, you can do what you like. So I think there's a lot more conversation around that. So I think that kind of conversation has changed. But I still think, and that's why I said most of my clients are those people who suffered through that and are now at this point where they want to make changes. So I definitely think it has changed a little and it's getting better, but still people are stagnant because they're unsure. Should I do it? Can I do it?
Yeah.
What will people say if I quit my good job and go after something else? Or, you know, it's about quitting your job. It's about really just you being happy and being unapologetic about what you want out of life.
Oh, absolutely, because when you really come down to it, and I forgot who said it, it might have been an Einstein or somebody, but the only thing that's constant is change.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're so afraid of change sometimes, you know. But we all change every day. We're not the same person that we was yesterday. So change is constant in all of our lives. We just act like we don't acknowledge it. We can't accept the big changes because we change every day.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, change has to do with the unknown. That's what people are afraid of. If you know something's going to be a certain way, you're not afraid of it. But if all of a sudden you knew what it was going to be like, you knew how you would react to it, not what happens to you, how you react to it, all of a sudden it's a whole different story.
Yeah.
If I walk up and you slap me in the face, I'm going to get slapped in the face. I can't stop that. But what I can control is how I respond to it.
You react. Yes, yeah. Your reaction. And, you know, and that's another PowerPoint where people don't really know how powerful they are when it comes to their reaction. You cannot always control people, what they say, what they do, but you can get to a place where it does not affect you like it used to. Your reactions are different. And people, that's another PowerPoint that people give away. That's almost like blaming someone. You're giving away that power still.
You know, it's what's coming up for me as you're talking, I was thinking about this, that, you know, we try to hide ourselves from people, but the more you try to hide, the more you tell somebody what you're like, and that's what they use to control you.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. You know, I don't know when it became that we could not be ourselves. Though, when did we learn to hide certain parts of us or only let other parts be seen? That's a tragedy because some people will never ever get beyond being able to, you know, again, take off that mask and be who they are. And I don't know exactly how that started. Everyone sweeps everything under the rug. That's why I wrote this book, and it's so shocking to some people that I talk about some of the things I talk about. But I said these are things that other people have gone through as well, and it's time to have some conversations so people know that they're not crazy or that they're not the only ones going through a particular thing. I don't know when we got like that.
Yeah, I know, because when my life is like this. If you were to walk up and call me an idiot, my response to you is, yeah, and I'm good at it. What are you going to do with that? Can't
you know,
fight with me if I'm agreeing with you. Yes.
Right. And, you know, I had a conversation with one of my daughters as well because someone had told her, you know, when did it get that someone can dictate what you even think about yourself? Someone had told her, you think you're cute. And I said, well, shouldn't you think you're cute? And why does it affect someone else that you think you're cute, they should think they're cute too. And I said, so I don't know even when people's, you know, how can you put what you feel onto somebody else and how they feel about themselves? It's just a crazy cycle we have created in this society.
Now, let me give you this one for your daughter, okay? Ask me if I'm good looking. Go ahead. Ask me if I'm good looking. Go ahead.
Are you good looking?
Funny you should ask that. Absolutely. And if you don't think so, somebody else will. See, Tamara, what it comes down to, if I had the ability to put five women in front of me, standing in front of me, looking at me, and I could stand behind each one and look through their eyes and see me, I'd see a gorgeous Michael, a homely Michael, an okay Michael. And the ones that think I'm homely or ugly, there's nothing I can do to change that. Nothing.
Absolutely.
So I go with the ones who think I'm gorgeous. Yeah.
Yes.
And that's really, yeah.
Yes, I like it.
Yeah. Okay. We're starting to run out of time, so let me ask you this. Website we can find you at and get the book.
www.tamarahartley.com. That is my main website, and all of my programs, everything you can find right there at that website. So that's tamarahartley.com.
Wonderful. And by the way, Tamara, if somebody misses it, it's up on our website right now, and it's going to be there for a long time. Okay. And by the way, thank you so much for being here.
And thank you for having me. I have enjoyed our conversation.
Wonderful. Okay. Take care. Good night.
You too. Good night. Thank you.
Welcome back. I'm Michael. You're listening to the Michael Dresser Show. Julie Fox with us, the author of the upcoming ebook, From Stress, Worry, and Overwhelm to Peace, Happiness, and Massive Success. Julie's a lifelong entrepreneur who shows creative female business owners how to combine cutting-edge marketing strategy with inner high priestess superpowers to create business that attract perfect clients, provide a substantial flow of money, and make a difference in the world. Early in life, she developed the ability to see what it is not shown and hear and what is not said. And in 2006, she received her coach certification from the Coaches Training Institute, which gave her the structure to use her intuition for the good of others. Today, Julie provides coaching, training, workshops, mastermind retreats through her company, Kick-Ass Biz Coaching. And let us say, Julie, hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, wonderful, and thank you so much. I think in this today's world, we do need kick-ass business coaching because you've got to get out there and you've got to be able to express yourself and let the world know you're there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really want my clients to have businesses that they can say are kick-ass businesses.
Yeah.
Not little piddly, you know, I make a little bit of money and I do a little bit of work businesses, but, you know, making a difference in the world and a difference in their lives.
Have you found with working with women that, you know, we hear so much and there's so much media and so much the information we do and don't get, that there is that little bit of fear of not being accepted out there in the business world? Is that still part of what stops it?
I think for women, it's more a matter of this internal thing that says, I'm really not valuable. I think women still have, you know, we are genetically designed to take care of other people, and we do it really well. And so when it comes to the point of putting a price on our services and getting out there selling it, women often are reluctant. They say, hey, you know, I just do this naturally, and I do this for other people. And it's really valuable work, and oftentimes women don't see the value in what they do. I think guys are the opposite. I think guys will go out there and bluff it and say, I'm more valuable than I think I am, and they do that much easier. So it's just a different way of approaching the world.
Yeah, because when you really come down to it, businesses are about taking care of people. And, you know, and everybody's so frightened of this word sale, sale, sale. I mean, we're all day long, consciously, unconsciously, we're selling something. You know, selling is nothing more than offer and acceptance. And I really believe when you get to a point and that person, quote unquote, on the other side of the desk, the counter, whatever, realizes that you have something there that's going to change and do something and benefit their lives, who cares about selling?
That's right. I like to change the word sales into the word service. So your
okay.
very first service to the client is having that sales conversation and finding out what they really, really need. And a great piece of that service conversation is, can you legitimately serve them? And if you can't, you better let them know, hey, I'm not
sure.
the right person for you. The other side of sales, though, is receiving. It's a give and a receive. And so if you don't have one, you're out of balance with the other. If you're
yeah.
not able to receive value for what you're giving, the number of sales that you do will actually drop. So lowering your prices actually lowers the number of people who will buy from you because
sure.
you're making this point to the universe that I'm not willing to receive money.
Oh, and no question about it. See, and I really believe when it comes down to it, it's like, I'm not going to get political, but let's use Hillary Clinton as an example. If she became president of the United States, from that moment, she would transition from being a woman to the most powerful person in the world. And I really believe that's really when it comes down to it. When you're in business positions, I don't think you're a man or a woman anymore. You are that position. And you better know exactly what you're doing in that position and how to respond and deal with the people, quote unquote, on the other side of the desk.
And if you don't know, then you better have mentors or coaches
yes.
or somebody ahead of you. I you know, not just because I'm a coach, but I'm a really strong advocate of having some kind of mentor. My business has never grown because I haven't had that. So,
but Julie, these skills are natural. But the point is, these skills are not natural. We have to be taught these skills, and that's why you need the mentors. You know, because if somebody has this idea of going into business, doesn't mean that they're going to know what to do with the creation, the marketing, the accounting. I mean, it goes on and on. And that's why people like yourself are out there. People that have the ability to do this inside, they don't have the skills to do it outside because it's learned. Any way you look at it, it's learned. There's a process behind all of it.
Exactly. I couldn't agree with you more. And when I started my coaching practice, you know, I went through the Coaches Training Institute. I had great coaching skills, but I had a certain level of business skills that I had learned. I started a couple of businesses before and helped some people, but I certainly didn't have the depth of business knowledge that I have now that I only got because I've had mentors, I've had coaches, I continue to go to classes, I continue to go to events where I can hang out with people who are on the cutting edge and continue to grow my skills as a business owner as well as a coach. And so you
sure,
know
and, and it's
stuff.
Knowing, yeah, it's knowing what those people want on the other side of the desk.
Yeah, exactly.
The very important, I remember 30 years ago, 35 years ago, it was a summer I needed to make some more money. So I'm looking in the newspaper, and it said, used car salesman wanted. And I said, no, I cannot do that. I can't. And I'm driving down the street. It wasn't me now, Julie. It was the car that turned into that lot. I had nothing to do with it. So
I
pull in. I sit down with the guy, and I sit down. I introduce myself. I said, I'm here about the ad. And he said, what do you know about cars? I said, nothing, but I can sell anything. He said, when do you want to start?
Yep.
We knew what he wanted.
Yeah. And that's an interesting thing because a lot of times when people are hiring, you know, as you become an entrepreneur and you start as a solo and then all of a sudden you get to this place where you have to hire somebody, I think that's really interesting because I'm going through a process now of refining who to add to my team. And I'm not looking at specifically that they can use Infusionsoft, although I want, you know, them to be qualified. But it's what kind of person do I want? What kind of skills do they have that help them move forward as a person, not necessarily the tasks that I can teach them? And I think that we forget that when we first start hiring as well, that it's not just this person can use InfoSoft or can, you know, any of the systems we use, but that this person is the kind of person that will fit on our team and is not exactly like you. So
and the
I
other
love
thing
that
I,
you've had that.
The other thing, too, to really take a look at, getting away from, you know, corporate and business and whatever, you know, you have another name besides, and I can hear it now, besides CEO of the company. You want to know what that name is?
Tell me.
Mom.
I am a mom. And
yes.
I am a grandma, but, you know, more than that, I'm a grandma. Because
but I mean,
once
for the
you
business.
Have grandchildren. Oh, and I treat my clients that way. I mean, if you're in my world, I am dedicated to you. I'm dedicated to your business. I have boundaries just like a mom has. And, and those are skills I did learn raising my kids. But I will fight
That's
for
a
you
business.
Tooth and nail.
What you model for your children when they were growing up, the way you model them to receive acceptance, acknowledgement, et cetera, is what they look for in the outside world when they get away from home and when they get into their professions, whatever it is that they're going to do in life, this is what they look for. Unconsciously, they look for mom and dad in the business. They look for family.
Yes.
Yeah,
and
you'll find
that,
go ahead.
It's amazing because I think that's what people are looking for now. I think they're looking for community. We have gone so digital and so online. And what I'm seeing is this real hunger to connect people to people.
Yeah.
And that goes right back to our first conversation about how do you make a sale? You connect people to people. And
absolutely.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I build into every one of my programs is how do I connect, how do I create groups of communities?
Yeah, and it can be boiled down to basically this. I'm going to become you now, okay? I'm Julie. My business. Okay, ask me what my service is about.
What is your service about?
About you. That's the point, Julie. If it's not about me, I'm not going to listen to you. And like all people, people want to know about themselves. They want to know how, why they're going to benefit from what you're offering. And if it's not about them, and that's where I think a lot of businesses miss it in this digital age. And you're right that people miss that mom and pop. They miss that walk in and they say, how's your dog?
Yeah. You know, Michael, it's really funny because the town I live in, we've got a couple of big grocery stores, and they're great. But the little corner store is where I run into all my neighbors, and I shop there, and it's because I can walk in there and go, hey, can you get me goat butter? And they're going to go order something special. Or, you know, I walk down the wine aisle, and Victor says to me, hey, Julie, here's the wine that Brian really liked, because he knows I don't drink wine and my husband does. And
yeah, but first name, Julie, first name. Here's the wine Brian likes. Yeah.
You cannot pay a marketing person what he gains by doing that.
Right.
Because I'll be loyal there forever.
Oh, totally true. And in any business, corporately, whatever the case may be, when it comes down to it, that's what they look for. And when they become part of it, it's like them talking to you that way, you feel part of their business. You know, you're there in the overall management and marketing and everything else because what they're doing is causing you to become part of it.
Yeah. And so when we're thinking about marketing to our prospects, that's what we have to be thinking about. Every email that goes out is a love note to your prospects. Every time you work with a client, it's 100% about the client while you're with that client. And even when you walk into a networking group, you know, I do a lot of networking. I teach a lot of networking. And oftentimes my clients will say, well, I'm going to this networking event. I want to get 3 new clients out of it. And that's a great thing to set yourself up. But as soon as you walk into the room, that has to go away. And you have to be all about being with the people in the room. And that's what will attract them. That's what will make you magnetic so that they will want to work with you. And
I absolutely agree with that. Yeah. No, I absolutely agree with that. And especially in today's world, I'm going to go back to this, as closed office is getting as technologically as it grows that way, you know, less and less people, everybody's on their cell phone. I went to the gym, 2 years ago, and there was a guy standing there. He had his back to me, and I'm talking to him. He's not talking back to me, so I walked away. I thought, well, you don't talk to me. Don't pay attention. I didn't realize he's on his cell phone. they don't pay attention anymore. They're there. Yeah. Now, the other side of that. Oh, go ahead.
Well, we were just at Disneyland, and we were standing in line at one point, and I looked around, and about half the people there were on their cell phones. And I thought, people, you paid a lot to be here. Look up.
Yes. Yeah. It's that whatever it is, you see people constantly on those cell phones. They're sitting there. They're on the phone. They're texting. They're doing this. They're doing that. And it's getting away from that personal touch. And, you know, and if we lose that, I think we've lost our culture. I think we've lost our humanity, and business is going to turn into something that you just sit home and hit a button and it gets delivered at your door or dropped off by some machine.
Yeah. And I do want to say that I do believe in using social media. I have some great clients I've met there. I have some friends that I met through Facebook who are dear friends and colleagues now, but they're not friends and clients and colleagues because I posted a post.
Yeah.
they're part of my world because after I posted the post, they made a comment, and then we built a relationship over time. And
oh, sure.
So I truly believe in the power of social media and using social media, but you've got to apply because it gets you out of your neighborhood. You know, my friend Tracy, I would never have met her if it hadn't been for social media. And we did tons of brainstorming together. But that had to be built in the same way I would build a face-to-face relationship. It doesn't take the place of actual connection. So both are super important.
And what they have to hear in the very beginning is that certain something that relates to them specifically. You know, there's three kinds of an audience out there, but the third part is an audience most speakers miss completely. It's someone who knows someone who is the target audience. Quick example, you're on the least listened to station in the country. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. If you got 8 people out there listening at once, it's a miracle. And you own a jewelry store, and you say to the audience, everything in my store for the next 48 hours is free. Julie, you'd be out of business so fast you wouldn't know it hit you because someone would tell someone. Social media
and
is powerful, word of mouth.
I would find out about that. I would definitely be there at that jewelry store.
Absolutely. Somebody told somebody, and that's really what it is when it just truly comes down to it. Truly comes down to it. Okay, we got a couple minutes to go. Let me ask you this. I pick up the book. I read it page by page, cover to cover when it comes out. And the question is, what do I, Michael, get that I didn't have before I read the ebook?
I think what the ebook really does is it lays out some really simple steps for getting you to where you want to be. The number one step is how to be happier. And the reason that I focus there is because your mindset really is what determines your level of success. And all the studies show that the happier you are, the more successful you'll be. It just creates neural pathways and all kinds of firing in your brain. So you're going to get some steps to be happier. But then it doesn't make a difference what your mindset is if you don't take action. So I've outlined some really simple steps for how to take action every day and grow your business. And that combination of using those two things together will eventually take you down this road that you never would have gotten to before, which is the level of success you want. Now, for some people, it's going to be a lot faster, and some people are going to be slower because that's your journey and your pace. But if you never get started on the road, you're never going to get there. You can't just sit around and think about growing your business forever. You have
to start walking
at some point. And those are the things that I outlined for you.
Wonderful. And let me ask you this. Website we can find you at, how to get consultations, and also the book.
So the website is www.kickassbizcoaching.com.
Wonderful. So, and by the way, if somebody misses it, it's on our website right now, and it'll be there.
And you can actually download the book right there on that website, and it'll show up in your inbox almost immediately.
Wonderful. Julie, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure. Take care. Good night.
Good night.
I'm Michael Dresser.
And I'm Radio Susie.
And that, my friends, is...
It is a wrap.